Dude, he's a toad. Holy smokes, dude.
Welcome back to the Midwest Hinds Hunt Podcast. I am your host, Braden Tolles. Thanks for tuning in. I can't believe I'm living my dream. Early morning flights, the skies are filled up with these whistling wings. Sights that dreams are made of. Look at God's creation. Dust coming in as we struggle to load. Kid number two is a hell of a load. Shots going off as they dropping the hole. It's so cold and my call keeps sticking. I'm being precise with the notes I'm picking. My lead is true, so no duck I'm missing. Full choke, so I'm good at a distance. Welcome back to the Midwest Hinds Hunt Podcast. I'm your host, Braden Tolles. To my left,
Colton Wallison. How you doing, buddy?
No, not bad. We're down a soldier from last night. But no, I'll be honest. I totally thought we were running a part two. And then Bryce had to leave because LB has a cat allergy. And then you stood up. I thought you were just stretching out the old legs. And then I'm like, fuck, he's planning on getting out of here too, which it's fine. No worries at all. I just wanted to get this second part in because, I don't know, I felt like last night, okay, we were drinking, obviously, but we also kind of like got lost in a rabbit hole.
We did.
Like, and it was going a lot of different ways, you know, with, honestly, to sum it up, like trying to think about it, you know, three Crown and Sprites later, it's like, big deer seem to cause a lot of problems, and I don't mean that in a bad way, necessarily.
Yeah, it's kind of another way to look at it. Big people do crazy things for big deer.
It makes people do stupid things, not just like, you know, be like, money-wise, obviously, like you were talking about, it blows spots up, but also it's like the whole like legal and not legal thing too that big deer can can do. And I don't know, but it's gonna happen, you know. It's like it's inevitable. You can't control it no matter what, but it was an interesting rabbit hole going down and then going into that 268 that was killed, you know, a couple weeks back. But no, on this one I'm gonna try to keep us a little more on topic. So let's do a season update. Season so far for this fall.
Okay.
If you want to take it first or I can take it, it don't matter to me.
Yeah, you go for it.
Okay. So we kind of dropped last night that we both are hunting some pretty big deer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, big. And I'll just go into it with mine first. I got cameras out. Oh, I think I did earlier this year. I think I got them out second week of July, which I guess is kind of normal. Usually I wait almost till the end. I used to go in like the July 4th weekend every year and, you know, get all the spots mowed. I'd get feeders up, cams, you know, trim, shooting lanes, do all of it. Hang stands if I didn't have one there already, or check the strap, whatever. But got them out a lot earlier this year, especially on this piece, because I told you I didn't get it into there till mid-October last.
Yep.
And sure enough, I don't know, probably not even 2 weeks, probably like 10 days into getting that spot set up, boom. And, you know, he was showing up all July, all August, pretty much all of September. And it was funny. So I left for Colorado on the 20th.
Yep.
And I almost, man, I was talking to Drew about it, and I was talking to other Colton about it. I almost, like, because I rode with Drew and his dad out there. We met up at his place and bugged out from there. I almost stayed behind for like 3 or 4 days because you were, did you remember that cold front that was coming in?
I remember that.
Like,
with all that rain.
It was, what was it? 23rd and 4th.
Yep,
I want to say. That was right. Because, and anywho, so he was showing up, and he was close, man. He was really close in the mornings, and I'm talking like another 15 minutes, and you would have been within legal shooting light. Like, it would have been that
right there.
Right there, that like gray light. Mm-hmm. But he was that close to it. And I saw this cold front coming and I'm like, fuck. Mm-hmm. I'm like, do I go or not? And I ended up saying, screw it. Left on the 20th, headed yep. west. I mean, those trips are so much fun. It's like, yeah, it would have been cool, you know, to kill one that early, but it's like, dude, you got all fall to do it. And it's like, you limited on time out there. So he never showed, which I was happy about, but he ended up disappearing on the 25th. I think I kind of got into this last night. Mm-hmm. Can't fully remember. Sorry if I already did, but MIA for 2 weeks plus. Mm-hmm. And then just, I don't know, a week ago, he showed back up on a camera like at 8:30 PM.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's regular. Like he was there again, 5:30 to like 5:45 this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at with my shooters. Let's see here. I hunted the past couple cold fronts we had in October, a couple of big ones,
mm-hmm.
like nothing like that stayed, mm-hmm. but you know, there was a day or two. And I know we kind of got into this last night about those morning hunts of October.
Yep.
And
it's kind of tricky if you overfeed.
It can be, definitely. But the way I do it is, and I'll kind of go into that because we kind of stopped. I'm not that close to like the ag mm-hmm. like you are. Like there is ag, but it's far enough away. I can't see it from the stand. Like there's okay. a lot of like the neighbor has, it's like 400 some odd acres that he owns.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some ag, but it's kind of further back. So where I'm at, it's like a field edge, like kind of a transition slash it comes down to like a natural pinch that they like to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeder pretty close. And the way I do it is I walk a good ways. I'm staying on the edges on the, what would that be? The east side. And I walk all the way down headed north.
Mm-hmm.
And I got cams. I got one where it was an old scrape from last year. They haven't hit it yet. I don't know if they're just done with it or what, but I got cams. Like I can see if anything's down there.
Sure.
And I'll always check the cameras. And if there are deer down there, I'll just wait. Like I'll wait for them to get out of there. And if they end up staying there all morning, then I won't just slip in. But like, I feel like your entrance, your inner and your exit is huge.
100%.
And I'm not going to say it's bulletproof, because, you know, deering will come from wherever and whenever they want to, you know. Yeah. But for the most part, you know, where I think this big deer is bedded,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm boogering them up. And I have two different enters, and then I can exit either way.
Mm-hmm.
But he's more to the west, northwest, I'd say. Maybe even west.
Okay.
And I come in either from straight to south down this big ridge, or I come in from the east on kind of this beaten down trail. But I mean, put it this way, I did booger up a doe, but I mean, it's a doe. You know, give it 10, 15 minutes, it's like,
sure,
she blows out of there. The hunt's, it's like starts over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Guys get, how do I say this? Like, you know, if a doe starts blowing on them, they get all pissed off. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Now, if I can shoot her and she's
getting shot.
Yes.
She's getting shot.
Yeah. But like, I don't get beat up by the fact I'm like, shit, I just got blown at, my hunt's over. I don't do that necessarily. But for the most part, I think my mornings are pretty, I got a good way of getting in and out.
Good.
Now, with that said, I'm not going to hunt every October morning. It's just strictly these cold fronts and yep. evenings are, you know, it's easy to get in. I'll put it that way. But that's kind of where I'm at with the mornings. Oh, you're good. You can crack it. What about you?
Because
that's all I've done. I've done two morning sits, and I did an evening sit. And
yep. So I did six 10-hour days so far.
Okay.
In a row. After this one, I was hoping same things. That same cold front you're talking about. I was
the third, 23rd and 24th.
Yes. So yeah. That I started the 22nd. I hunted, I mean, almost.
Now, is this after a target buck or is this? Yeah. Okay. Because I know you've killed does. I'm not trying to ruin your story, but yeah. I'm just trying to paint my own picture.
I've killed a few does. This was after that target buck.
Okay.
And I was hunting him where it was miserable. Like once the cold front, came through.
And is this out west?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. And the cold front came through, and it was a lot of action, but nothing, you know, no shooters came by.
Yeah.
Then once it warmed up, I still refused to, like, I knew they were in that section. So we were getting after it. And I even sat through, you know, a west facing stand when it was 88 degrees and there wasn't a whole lot of wind. So that was fun.
That's also the tough thing about these fucking, like, and it's hard too, because
early season.
Yeah. It's like, you know, they're there. Same thing with me. Like, he's been close, mm-hmm. but it's like, you have a hard time going in when it's going to be almost 80 for the day, or yeah. even is 80. But, you know, it happens. You know, you see guys kill early all the time, mm-hmm. and it's 80, 85 degrees. I mean, deer are still going to be deer.
Yeah, they still have to move, and I get that. But that's why I did it. So that was a pretty uneventful trip. Pretty uneventful trip out there.
What's the drive, if I can ask? You can just... Okay, yeah. I mean, I know what you're saying. I didn't want you to say it, because it's like, if you know where we are, you can kind of...
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some crazy fucking people out there that do that.
Exactly. And so that's pretty uneventful. So, like I've always said, try and get a deer for grandpa. Get a doe for grandpa.
Yeah.
Got it actually right by the house over here.
Nice.
That was sweet. Tried out a new broadhead.
Which one?
Evo.
Oh, yeah. You liked
it. The Evo Hide. Yeah. Really, really liked it.
Check them out, Evolution Outdoors.
Yep, they fly really nice.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, so did you, when you bought them, did you do the 3-pack or the 6-pack?
Originally I did the 3-pack, but then I bought another 3, and they sent me.
Did they throw you in a practice head? Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Oh, that arrow's on the other side of the mini fridge. I think they're all the same practice head.
Because for the weight size, yeah.
I got the Jekyll.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing the WTFs, Whitetail Furies is what they call them. And I just did a 6-pack of each, and I got the same practice head. So I was assuming the hide's the same.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. I like the hide just because them guys talk about, like, they're shooting elk. And after seeing the penetration with that whitetail, like, I mean, I run a fairly big setup.
Yeah.
And nothing heavy, like, weight-wise, but I run, like, a heavy, you know, a good setup.
It's an 80-pound draw.
Yeah. 80-pound, 29.5-inch draw. So, like, I've got speed.
Yeah.
And it still blew that big expandable, the hybrid or whatever you want, hybrid expandable, whatever you want to call it. It blew it through that doe. I mean, she was at about 35 yards. Blew through her and stuck about 6 inches into the ground. So, I'm like, can't beat that.
No. I mean, dude, the thing about the broadhead talk, it's like you can go around and around and around. What's the best broadhead? What's this? You know, some guys like run the real expensive shit. I know you have a set of them, the Iron Wheels.
I love Iron. I mean, I've had great luck with them.
Dude, I know guys that still run Ragers and have great, great success. I know guys who run, like, it just depends how much you want to, like, dive into. There's dudes I know who still have fixed and expandables in the same quiver. You do that?
Yep.
You know, the way I see it is, like, I've switched broadheads up quite a bit over the past couple years, but it almost just comes down to a confidence thing.
100%.
Does it not?
100%.
It's like if you're a guy and a rage is your jam,
yeah,
dude, fucking run it. Hell yeah. I hate going down that rabbit hole, because it's like, dude, whatever you want to run, I don't care.
You can get stuck in the tornado, and I'm 100% on the team of whatever you're confident in, use it. I have a reason for running both the split quiver, a fixed and mechanical, but whatever your confidence in, run it.
Like, I listened to a podcast the other day, and a guy was talking. He was the Montech G5s. He's like, worst broadhead out there. I'm like, I mean, I killed my first bow kill was a hog down in Texas. Used it, shot some does with them.
How many deer have been killed with a Montech over the years?
And it's actually, I know who it was. It was, and I'm not knocking the guy, because I actually like him. I think he's an all right dude. I mean, some people hate him, but Bomar, he was the one who said it, and he shot it was like a 200 inch deer. And, like, you look at it and you're like, that deer should be dead. But weird shit like that happens all the time. Yes. And I feel like 95% of hunters blame the broadhead when something like, dude, sometimes freak shit just happens in the way I look at it. It's like, okay, it just wasn't meant to be. Like, okay, something happened, something weird. Like, I don't know, you know, and there's, we're, you know what, we can go into this too, that whole TV hunting shows, like the pass throughs. Like, yeah, that this plays into that.
It does.
It, there's so many different scenarios from stand height 100%. To bow setups to arrow setups to the angle of the deer, the way he's standing, his position. Who knows? That deer could have something, his insides could be different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many different possibilities and scenarios. I think, once again, it's a cop out to blame the broadhead. Like, that's 100%. The first thing everybody goes to.
I am confident. Now, legal disclaimer. I would never do this. I've never done this.
But, oh, I know exactly what you're about to say.
But I am confident if you took a field, an arrow with a field point and put it through both lungs or the heart, it's going to die.
It will, without a doubt. I mean, 100%. It is the most, it's very unethical and do not do it. It's probably not legal.
No, it's not legal at all.
Dude. Honestly, it, and like I said, weird shit can happen, but shoot your bow more.
Yeah.
Like, go practice more. So when you get in that scenario, it's like, you know, like I said, weird shit happens, but there's nothing to blame.
No.
Like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. You ever had it where you're aiming right behind the elbow, and then when you get up and find the deer, and it hit like 4 inches high?
Oh,
like, yeah, like you didn't think that they ducked it that hard, but you're like, once you get up on them, you're like, oh my God.
Have you ever spined one?
I did one.
I've spined one,
but it was right underneath me.
See,
I shot straight.
It was the eight, or technically the nine with that little crab claw, the 150 some odd eight. Came to full draw. There's a branch that comes off the tree. I've talked about this before. I am down crouched and there's a tree limb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a tough shot, but at a certain point he was almost on me. Like, I had to crouch down and he was looking right at me, but he was still broadside. He's just right on me.
Mm-hmm.
Ducked the piss out of it. And I mean, dropped. Now, I should have probably shot for, like, kind of, cause you know what I mean? When you have a deer alert and on you, you know that drop's coming. Yep. You should almost anticipate it and aim a tad lower. But
okay, here's something. Do you, let's say a deer is relaxed, do you get them to pick their head up before, do you all like the typical, like TV, the popular like that, do you get them to pick their head up?
Okay. No, I would say no, just because I don't like even doing the MEP thing unless you have to. Like, the first buck I killed, I had to, or else he would have been Mach 1 out of the country because he came into a fucking rattle.
Yeah.
And I stopped him and he slid 4 feet before I shot him.
Mm-hmm.
The other, I didn't stop either one of the other. Actually, I stopped that third one. He was, came by me, stopped. He was just moving super slow, and I didn't even MEP. I went.
You get him to stop like that?
Oh, yeah.
I had to yell at my deer.
No.
My
it, dude, that's, now, if it's never happened, but if I have to, if you're like, or, and then he still goes, then MEP, still goes, MEP, hey.
Yeah.
But
I just go right to hay.
Dude, I hate that because you know there's going to be a buck where you go, hey, and he goes without even fucking looking.
Now, I'm ready at full draw.
No,
like, I'm,
I agree.
It's game time.
But that's what I'm saying, though. There's still, it's happened. I've seen it happen on, like, shows where guys do that, and that deer just blows out of there without giving it even a look what that was.
So, I could see that. My thing, I think, maybe I say whoa first. I think I give him a chance at, like, whoa.
Oh, I just try to start as quiet as possible. Like,
yeah.
And literally, it's a horse click, or it's a,
yeah.
And they're just like, huh?
I tried to stop that six, and I shot him walking. I couldn't get him stop. I was yelling at him, hey.
Oh, that's the one that hit back. I remember you, because that was a far shot too, wasn't it? That was the ground blind.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was a doe. You told me you had a far shot with something from the blind.
I don't know. His
50, might have been both.
52. Yeah, it was 52 yards on him, but he was so focused on that hot doe. Like, he was like, yeah. It was.
Well, see, there's also guys who will talk shit about a shot that far. Dude, honestly, if the deer ain't moving, it's totally relaxed. Like, yeah, shit can happen, but
yeah.
We practice that far for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not just like, yeah, I get it. You want a lot of things. And don't get me wrong. Definitely. I want those, you know, the 10s, the 20, the 30 yard shots. Like anything after that, you're kind of playing with Mother Nature a bit. Like, but there's a reason we should practice that far. It's
100%. And I still have a limit to like what I'll take a shot on a whitetail.
What would you say it is?
65 yards. They just move too quick. I can hit it. I'll hit my block target
mm-hmm.
at 85, 90. I've tried 85, 90 before.
Mm-hmm.
I can hit the target. I can shoot, you know. But I think whitetails move way too quick.
Dude, I did a frontal on a doe at 52.
Mm-hmm.
She just looked and watched that arrow just bury, like... Situational.
Yep.
Depends on your deer, depends where you're at. Mm-hmm. But no, one thing I did kind of forget about when we were talking to those cold fronts that came in. One, I passed, call him Nacho.
Okay.
He's a decent nine, probably like low 40s maybe. He actually has pretty good mass. Passed him. Another time I didn't hunt, had my number two buck. We call him 8 ball.
Okay.
He was there, so now we're just waiting on the number one, which we call him Drive By. You got? Okay. Do you name your deer?
No,
dude, you got to name your deer. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like I have something against naming deer. Like I just,
my thing is, it's like, okay, that's the eight with trash. That's the trashy eight, or that's the split nine, or that's the big 10. Like, mm-hmm. You know how many big 10s there are? I'm like, I just like giving them a name.
No, I can see
it's
that.
Fun, and it kind of just adds a little bit of like fun and humor to the mm-hmm. fall. I don't know. All right, moving on. Kind of still playing into this October hunting, November. So when will you start hitting mornings for you?
Well, unless he starts daylighting early, I'm going to go,
what's early?
Like, if he starts daylighting tomorrow, I'm gone.
Yeah.
But, and that's kind of how I've left it. I wait until he starts daylighting, and I'm going to be out there within 6 hours of him daylighting. but planning on, that after that first week of in November, so like that November... Sometime within the first week of November, I'm going to spend about 10 days out there. I'm playing around a cold front.
Yeah. And hitting mornings.
Yeah, all day. November rut sits, I go all day.
Dude.
I've killed a lot of deer midday. We talked about that last night.
Yeah, I know. I told you about the one time I have had something walk, you know, like 11.
Do you hunt through the midday, though?
No.
Well, you can't kill if you're not there.
I understand. But it almost takes the fun out of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kind of going back to the whole, like, when does it almost start to feel like work versus, like, having fun?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. Give me a second. All right. Good?
Yep.
All right. I think I've asked you this before. We've talked about, like, superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any? I can't remember if you did or not.
No. I know there's probably some that I do, but I used to be a lot crazier on scent control
mm-hmm.
than I am now.
Yeah. Dude, I've gotten better. I think I wouldn't call it crazy, but I used to be pretty kind of lazy mm-hmm. when it came to like my camo. Like I would, it's dumb. Like I'd keep it in totes all the time and it's cleaned here. But as soon as I get to my truck, I don't leave it in a tote. Like I used to just throw it in the truck and mm-hmm. then get dressed when I got out there. But now I'm like making it like religious to keep the shit in a tote. Like I drive now in my underwear till I get to the field, and then I get out and then I put on everything, you know. I'm just trying to be better about like, cause I do, I know, take the showers and like, I got like sweatpants cause I wear shit under my Sitka.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to be better about keeping all this stuff like scent free the best I can.
The best you can. Cause you're not gonna, so the way I look at it is I do everything that, cause I used to be the same way. I used to, you know, clothes never came inside, never gotten, you know, in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically like got dressed in the field. And then once I started elk hunting, I was like, I smell like I'm 10 days in the mountains running around.
Oh, well, you can't control that.
Exactly. So I go, so now around here, I control what I can control.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I play the wind.
Yeah.
Like I just, if I'm facing south, I won't hunt a north wind.
Right. Well, and I feel like also a lot of it kind of plays into like the setups, you know, like what thermals are doing or if a wind is swirling. Like this spot where I'm at, it can be tricky because behind you to the south, it's a steep.
Yep, you're steep down there in bluff country.
It's probably a third, and like from the east, it's more gradual going down. But the further you get to the west, it starts to cliff out because you can still go up and down. It's just steep, right? Yep. But there you got to be really careful with what you're doing because you can blow deer out of there
mm-hmm.
really fucking easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just also feel like you got to hunt it smart. Yes. And that's kind of where like you can take the scent control as far as you want, but at the end of the day, like they're going to smell you if it's a bad wind setup. I don't care how clean you are. Like you don't smell like them or anything they're used to.
Now,
you know?
I will say I do run Lycozonix.
Do you?
And
in the tree?
Yes.
What is one of those? I've thought about getting into something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
My cousin works for Ozonix.
Oh, you can tell me that.
Yeah. My cousin works for Ozonix. He is a badass. Shout out, Jake.
What's up, Jake? Hook me up.
Well, I guess he doesn't work for Ozonix, but he works for the marketing company that does everything for Sitka and Ozonix and a bunch of other companies. Uh-huh. But he convinced me, he was showing me everything. He's like, it is scientifically proven to remove scent. She's like, it is. He's like, where people mess up is, he goes, if the wind switches, you have to keep the Ozonix pointed with the wind. Now, if it's swirling, he's like, just let it swirl. But he's like, basically I point the Ozonix where I think the deer are going to come.
This is a deal you turn on, right?
Yeah.
Is it loud? No.
No, it just hums. Like, it's a very low hum. I hunted a... So, I told him, I said, okay, I'm going to test it out. I said, I'm going to hunt a bad wind. And I found, like... Now, this is a very, very heavy wind. Little over 10 mile an hour, I get kind of nervous about it. But, like, a 15 mile an hour wind, I'd be pretty nervous about it. But for, like, bow hunting. But I've had them walk 20 yards downwind of me when I had it going. And I'm not saying it's going to happen every time, but I think it gives me a better chance. And it goes back to if a wind switches, which they like to do out here.
Is there ever a time where you're like, it's too close to them? Like, I'm talking if you're like, okay, let's say you're here and you got a feeder and you're like sub 20.
They won't hear it.
No?
It won't bother. Because it won't bug them. I mean, you can hear it like, you can hear it, and
I mean that you got to think they can hear it too. Then
100%, but it doesn't sound. I don't think it sounds like something like enough to where. I mean, I've had them like look around, like not nervous, just like. But it's not like what you're like a big fan like you're talking about. It's just a slight hum, like slight hum.
See, do you have any of the like scent crusher? Does it like the bags, the like, or the locker, the ozone thing?
So I don't do that because it destroys rubber, and I've had too many friends like, and it's not on scent crusher. They tell you, they flat out tell you, don't leave it in here for more than like 20 seconds with it on, because it'll destroy the elastic.
See, I knew there was a big problem with the Sitka, and apparently they fixed it, but I can't remember what year of when they said they like changed out the rubbers or whatnot on the Sitka gear. Mm-hmm. And I'd have to look it up, but I've thought about doing it, but God, I would hate to ruin fucking whatever $600, $700 pair of bibs or whatever they cost these days. Yeah. I haven't looked in years, you know what I mean? But I'm like, I don't want to have to buy some new stuff because I just cooked it in a bag.
Yeah, and like, it's the same, it's still the same ozone technology.
Mm-hmm.
But it basically, it destroys elastic if you put it on there. Now they put a big warning label. This is how long it takes to kill your scent. That's all you do. And so I don't use any of the locker stuff. I used to have a bag, mm-hmm. like one of those
like a go bag type of
deal. Like a go bag deal. And it wasn't like electronic or anything. You just something that I could toss in there, and I would throw like a cedar branch
mm-hmm.
See, in there.
I'm like that. So like I'll do all the wash, but what I'm trying to do now is I hang it outside.
Yep.
And I'll let it hang out there, dry out there, and then I'll take my totes out, and then I'll tote it up from there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, you hear the guys talk about, and I know we've talked about this before too, like the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, it's natural. I'm like, I don't believe that, because what do you associate smoke with?
Like wildfire. Well, deer are going to associate it with wildfire.
You don't think they're going to? Out west, maybe. Around here, you know what I fucking associate it with?
Mm.
Humans, people. You don't have very many wildfires.
No, but I don't think it's a natural trigger to them.
But you know, like, there's some deer that are more like in these urban areas that were, even if it's like a, you know, a farm setup, it maybe not ever, but if the landowner's having a fire and there's smoke blowing all over the place, those deer know where that fire's coming from. They probably hear people. I just think that they kind of put the smoke smell with, like, associated with human smell.
Yeah. And
that's what I think. I've never tried it. Now, I don't know this for sure, but that's just where I stand on it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's natural.
I think it depends on the deer. And like, obviously where they're at, like, maybe, you know, I think whatever the smell is, I think deer are going to bust out. Cause I hunt, but one of the places I hunt,
mm-hmm.
In the Missouri property,
mm-hmm.
the farmer's in there every day. His workers are in there every day.
Yep.
Just like the place over by my house, they're there every day. So I found out I don't bust, like, when deer, I can watch them. You know, some does or whatever. It's a great spot for doe meat hunting. I can watch them bedded down on the pond dam, and they're looking at me. If I walk, I try and like be real quiet. Like, it's totally counterintuitive. If I walk, like, I'm trying to like be like a hunter and like, you know, like real quiet.
Yeah.
They won't get out of their beds. But if I walk like I'm the farmer checking fence,
mm-hmm.
and I walk in like I own the place.
Yep.
They don't give me a second.
Well, look at my number one. We call them drive by.
Mm-hmm.
We call them that for a reason, because there's people always driving by him on a side by side or four wheelers, and he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think they get used to that, but I don't know, man. It's like one of those things. It's like I want to kind of try some of this stuff out, like. If it's drive my truck or drive a four-wheeler or side-by-side all the way down to where I need to park and then hop off and walk in from there. But it's like and same thing with the smoke deal. Like, I'd like to test some of this out. I'm not going to test it out on a deer like this size. Maybe do it like with some doe hunt and see how it goes. But
yeah, I wouldn't. But like you said, deer get used to what's around them. Like, we have a property that we've hunted, and they ride side by sides 2-3 times a week, all the way through the place.
This is every day. I get trail camera photos if it's not someone on a mower or if it's someone on a side by side or someone running.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that kind of leads into this next thing. It's like frustrations with like permission pieces, because at the end of the day, it's not my ground.
No.
I can't control what goes on. Mm-hmm. Like, just like I told you a couple weeks ago, it would have been last weekend, that Halloween maze walkthrough thing they did for these kids. I'm not a dick. Well, okay, I am a dick. But, like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? But it's not my piece. Like, no. They just use that, the top part of the timber and, like, this, these, like, pines. They just do it. And it's okay. Like, I had deer on there literally a few hours after they were out. No, maybe not. It might have been the next morning. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of starting to learn. It's like, I need to not get mad with it, because at the end of the day, I can't tell a landowner, no, you can't do that. And they get used to it.
100%.
They get used to whatever, if it's farm pressure or if it's just, you know, natural, like mm-hmm. natural pressure from humans, you know. Mm-hmm. But you also hear guys talk about how they don't believe that. Like, they think that'll push deer out. Like, I think it just kind of depends.
And it does. I think
that's the thing about all of it. Everything we talk about is so, like,
it's situational.
Yeah, it's all situational, you know.
Because we've had big deer. We've had some big deer killed on these farms where, like, it's just the workers are in there all day, every day. Very hands-on, like, labor-intensive farm, not a row crop farm. And the big deer that do bed down in it or call that place home, they get used to it. And that's why, like, when I was growing up, I was hunting one of these places, shot a really nice 8-point.
Yeah.
I knew the farmer basically had seen him come out of a half-acre timber lot. And I said, man, that's a half-acre timber lot. And half acres being generous,
mm-hmm.
I go, it's probably the size of your backyard here.
Yeah.
I said, you know what? With all the leaves gone, and this was a rifle season in Missouri. I go, I bet I could see embedded. So all I did, I said, do you guys, I said, this is right by where your pallet place is, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah. I said, you have a guy sitting there, right? Like loading up, walking around, loading up, greasing all the equipment. And he's like, yeah. He's like, they grease the equipment every night before they go, you know, go home. I said, okay. So I just sat there. And when I got to the place, the sun came up, walked just like I walked from equipment to equipment. But I was looking in that half acre woodlot, saw a left side antler.
Yeah.
And I just stood there waiting for him to stand up.
Well, and so do any of these pieces you hunt, are they yours? Like,
no, we don't own anything.
Okay, so you're like me then. But man, I guess the frustrating thing to it is, it's like, what if I could just own this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a 40-acre lot. Not even, I don't even know if a quarter of it's huntable,
mm-hmm.
just because of the their like specific layout, you know, like they're always riding through the top part of it, and the bottom is really not a lot to hunt. But I just get frustrated because I'm like, dude, if I just had $600,000, because it's worth well over $500,000, that they mm-hmm. bought it for $500,000 a couple years ago.
Yeah.
$500,000 mm-hmm. on 40 acres. That's crazy.
Land price is going up.
I know, and they're not going to stop. But it's just like that what if deal, because like I look at it every time I'm there. I'm like, that could be a food plot. There could be a stand there. There could be another food plot here. You could do beans here. You could do, you know, your late season shit here. You could fucking hell plant corn and grow it if you wanted mm-hmm. to. Like, it could just be the most perfect setup, and mm-hmm. I just don't get to do it. And now they probably would let me do a food plot up top and like kind of manage the dirt and the ground there, like mow it and take care of it. But they're going to drive right past it every day almost,
yep.
riding their stuff. And it's like, is it worth it?
So this would be a good topic for a podcast, another podcast. Hmm. Would you rather lease and get, we'll put lease and get, or get permission on places or own ground? Because there's benefits to both.
No, fuck it. I want to talk about it now.
Okay.
I'd rather own it.
Okay.
Well, what would you rather do?
I'd rather get permission on it.
No.
But hang on. This is.
Why don't you just do the best of both worlds and own it and then go get permission in other places?
You could do that. My thing is, what I pretty much do is I took the going price, and this past season this year I started getting really aggressive on deer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have been the last couple of years, but this year I've been really putting like the full court press on them. Let's say I was going to go buy 100 acres.
Mm-hmm.
I took what my mortgage payment would be. So that's my 100% budget of just like I was going to buy a property. And because the thing is, if you buy, I don't know how big that place is, but let's say you buy an 80, you're only going to have one deer herd on that 80, and it's going to travel around with all your neighbors and everything. Well, if you buy that property, and I've seen it happen with friends, you really don't know what that property is going to do because you haven't owned it, you haven't hunted it, been there all hunting season.
Sure.
Are the neighbors trap shooting, you know, opening day of rifle?
So you're kind of saying if you own a piece and everything.
You're married to it.
Yes. But also, to be fair, it's going to go up in value.
100%. No, that's the benefit of, I think that's the big pro of owning ground.
I would, okay, let me take that back. I would buy a piece that I didn't live on.
Yes.
Because that way, you're not married to it. Now there, because like, you'd be married to it.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think it's the perfect setup.
Okay.
Because, so it's a long and narrow 40. Mm-hmm. The north, very north end is what I call hunt. I can hunt. And mm-hmm. I can hunt the top side, and I've hunted it before and had deer come by, but you almost need it to be so fucking cold that they don't want to ride their side-by-sides and stuff around. But I look at it, to the north of it, it opens up to a 400-acre. Now, that's a dream piece, that mm-hmm. there, but that's never going to happen. The piece next to it's another narrow 40, but behind it, there's a 250-acre piece that kind of comes in and like, it kind of like hooks into them. So like they stop, this piece comes in, and then, you know what I mean? It's just mm-hmm. the way the land is set up and who owns it, but it'd be perfect.
Yeah. But I'm not arguing that buying land is a bad choice. Cause it, you know, it's a better financial decision. 100% get that. What my thing, I think the benefits of the way I set it up is I can't afford to have some 3,000 acre piece or a full or two, you know, two sections, you know, have a full two sections to myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to be able to keep deer on my property. They're obviously going to go to the neighbors, you know, and everything. They're going to travel.
Yeah.
What I try and do is I tried to get permission and or leased. And I got a lot of permission, just, you know, handshake deal, permission to hunt.
That's what all mine are.
Yep. And I also have paid leases.
Yep.
But they're all spread out. So right now I'm working with 7 different deer herds. Because all the permission that I got,
mm-hmm.
they're basically in blocks that are at least 25 miles apart. So if my thought process was, if you have an 80, you might not have a true shooter, you know, a 6-year-old good, really good buck, like whatever number you want to put on him, but like a shooter for you, you might not have on that 80 a shooter every year. It just might not happen.
Sure, no, true.
Because you're dealing with one deer herd, but I'm dealing with all those deals. My odds of having a true shooter to chase is up. Like I told you about that, the place in Missouri that I hunt.
Yep.
Total, it's like 18,000 acres. It depends. I'm sure there's a shooter on there. There's some places I really haven't put a whole lot of time into.
Right.
But the places that I know I can slip in, slip out, and have a really high success, there are a few. And if there's not there, it ups my odds of having a big deer to chase.
See, I would also counter it with, I do think some pieces are too big.
Yeah.
I think, I bet my cutoff is significantly lower than your cutoff.
For size-wise?
For the size of a piece of ground to make it all huntable.
Oh, I would have to have to cover.
What do you think's, okay, let me just ask you this. Do you think 400 is too big to manage?
No.
What are you doing there? Stand what, every 40 acres or every what, 80 acres?
No.
It also depends on the layout of the piece, but what I'm saying is,
I give them a big sanctuary. So out of that 400, I might only hunt 20 acres. I might only put three stands on that 400 acres. And I can,
I don't think I'd want to manage anything. I don't think I'd want to manage 400.
So I'll leaving names out of this, but if I doubt they listen, but if they do, you know who you are. The very best family. Now this isn't a, these aren't professionals. No, they're not TV or whatever. The very best family that I know of, they're in a Midwest state that you wouldn't be surprised that, you know, big deer come from.
Oh yeah. It's one of the, it's either the Kansas, the Missouris, the Ohio's, the Iowa's, Illinois. The Illinois.
Yep.
Those are your states.
Yep. Yep. And they have a big chunk of ground that's been in their family since late 80s, early 90s. Probably, I think, late 80s. And they bought 3,000 acres back in the late 80s. They're big farmers, big farming family. All the brothers are into deer hunting. Of that 3,000 acres, it's a big block. It's a big block of ground. 900 acres in the middle, they've marked with purple, and they haven't walked step foot in it for 20 years.
See, now, okay, I kind of got to eat my words here a bit. I agree with that because that is big enough. Mm-hmm. I don't think 400 acres is big enough to have something that you don't touch because I feel like they can still leave it.
They can, but I think...
And will leave it, especially come November.
Yep.
Now, 3,000 acres, I wouldn't be surprised if you had bucks who never left that 3,000 in
sure.
It's November. Three, yeah, now, three they can, miles. Now, they can go miles, bit. Like, when buck on the wall went like 7, 8, or 9 miles, and I ended up killing him. Mm-hmm. I had him on camera, but so did a guy 8 miles away. Now, it can happen, but I don't... The biggest piece I think I would want to manage would be like 200 acres just because I don't have the equipment and I can borrow it. Sure. But I wouldn't want to be like, hey, Colton, bring your tractor and let's go fucking set up this 800 acre fucking piece. No, I'd want something small enough that I can manage. And what I also like about it is you get that wild factor of, hey, that's a new deer. I've never seen it before mm-hmm. because, you know, deer do their thing. Some move out, some move in, especially in November. Who knows what's going to happen? But I almost like having that wild factor side to it. I cannot imagine hunting something that big because I would lose my fucking mind.
Yeah.
It kind of comes down to the whole thing of having multiple shooters on different properties. Mm-hmm. Like you say you're on 7 different tracks right now, different permission pieces. Mm-hmm. I have three. One, I kind of turned over to my brother, let him run it how he sees fit, him and if Lexi wants to hunt it. Mm-hmm. The other piece I got permission on right up the road from one of Drew's. Mm-hmm. I have permission, haven't stepped foot on it. I have no reason to this year because I'm after
yeah.
something dumb, something big.
Yeah.
But I would hate it if you had, let's say, 2 bucks relatively, or no, put it this way. I would hate it if I had a, like a 150s or a 160s on one and then had like a 60s on another. I'd just be like, where do I go? And you know, it's going to happen. If you go hunt this piece, something's going to walk yep. here. And I feel like the more options you get, my head would explode.
Sure.
I like picking out a buck and it's probably why I've eaten tags over the years, because I like to play a chess match with one buck and I'm on a 40 acre piece and mm-hmm. there is thousands of acres around him that he can go the 400, the 2, or the other 40, whatever sure. it is. You know what I mean? And it almost dwindles your chances of killing that deer being married to that one property.
Yeah.
But I like that.
Sure.
I don't know why. Like there's pluses and minuses to it, positive and negative.
There is. And one of the things that I like about, like, let's say you had a 400 acre piece,
mm-hmm.
obviously during the rut, deer travel miles. But if you give a mature whitetail, it's a different game hunting a mature whitetail than a younger one.
Mm-hmm.
If you give him, let's say half of that 400 acres, I'm never going to step foot. I'm not going to shed hunt, not going to do anything in this 200 acres. He has food, cover, water. Why don't, like, he doesn't have, yes, he can leave. But I guarantee if you give him a 200 acre sanctuary that he's not getting messed with,
yeah.
The chances of him calling that home are really high.
And the older he gets, yep. the
smaller his home range gets.
Yep. And dude, you hear about that a lot. You know, the Drurys do it. The Bomars do mm-hmm. it. They have these pieces and they've both said it. They don't touch them. They won't shed hunt it. There's no yep. cameras. And Fair. But, oh my God, it would drive me nuts. I'd be like, dude, there could be something in there and I'm not going in there.
Mm-hmm. So
they also have way more ground than I could ever imagine.
Yeah. So that piece, one of the pieces that I hunt, I don't have any cameras set up on it. I don't go in there, and I probably won't go in there until late November. Cause I want after rifle season gets through, I want everything to get pushed to that place. Like yep. we talked about.
Well, and even see, I think that applies too, even with like my 40, mm-hmm. I won't say will not. I'm not going to say it 100%, but I tend not to be in there when rifle season's going on. Mm-hmm. One, I don't want to get shot because Let's be honest, and this isn't a knock to any rifle guys, but do you know how many rifle injuries there are with people walking through the woods? Someone has a rifle. It's still dark, but they see movement and they got a gun and they're going to pull the trigger. It happens.
100%.
Dude, so many deer get poached with a gun way more than deer get poached with a bow.
Oh, yeah.
I like staying out of there because they get bumped around. Like, prime example with drive-by. He used to come out of the same area all the time, and it was like the northeast. Like, if you're looking at the camera, mm-hmm. he'd come out of the northeast, and he stops, and he's on the other side of the fence, and he's looking. And then it's just like an old rundown fence. And he hops over, but all this year, it's from the west side. I think he's been getting bumped by the neighbors on the 400. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they're – and I'm not saying I'm an okay hunter. I'm not saying I'm the fucking – the man, the expert. Yeah. I'm far from it. But what I think is I'm like, they might be doing something that – see, and they also might not even know that deer exists. Mm-hmm. They might just be hunting a different setup. You get a north wind – they're on the north side of where this deer likes coming out at, mm-hmm. and they're pushing him out. Now, they could be hunting him, and they could have done something and blew him out, and that's why now he comes out over here. You never really know.
Sure.
It's like you want to strap a GoPro to these fucking things and see what are they doing and why are they doing. Like, mm-hmm. it would just, oh, my God, I want to know. I don't know. That's also going back to the thing about a piece that's so big. You could have something living on there, and you would never know it.
Yeah.
You would never know mm-hmm. because they are in some little hellhole pocket, or they just, I don't know. They're so like elusive, and it just makes me want to know what the fuck they're doing all the time. Like, if I kill this deer, I almost want to go ask some neighbors if I can walk their properties and find like these old sheds.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to find this deer's sheds from last year just because I'm like, where are you? And I almost want to say they're somewhere on this east side because that's where he was at all the time. This year he's all out of the west. I don't know.
Sure.
But moving on. My quiver setup. I think I told you about this. I'm only running 3 arrows in my quiver this year.
Okay.
Because I cannot fit these fucking broadheads down in the foam. Should I rip the foam out?
I mean, I don't really... Do you have the dual? Does your quiver have the two attachments? Like, does it hold on to the arrow at two spots like that one does? Like, that one's gripping like the arrow.
You're talking here and here?
Yeah.
No. Aren't we running the same quiver?
Yeah, we are. I wouldn't rip the foam out.
See, what I did was, so the way those blades come out of that broadhead, for anyone listening, it's not like a rear deploy, like mm-hmm. a Rage. You got your main, what would that be called? The
fixed blade.
You got the main fixed blade, and then off each side of the fixed blade are the expandables. Yeah,
two over the top expandables.
They're over the top, yes. So when it hits, what it does is it pushes those blades out and down. But when you put it into a quiver, especially hitting foam, mm-hmm. I feel like, and especially on the heads I'm running versus yours,
they're a lot bigger.
The bleeders are a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. So you're almost like, when you're pushing it into the foam, I feel like it's wanting to do this with those blades.
Yeah, putting pressure on the pin.
So what I did was I just took a knife and I like carved out the center of it. So it's just, there's still foam, but the middle. So I just run them all flat where the expandables are all sitting this way.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know what? If 3 arrows aren't enough, if you somehow go through 3 arrows in mm-hmm. one sit, you probably shouldn't kill them. Sure. You know what I mean? But that's what I'm running on a quiver setup. But you have no problem doing it with the hides.
No, because they are a little. So I think mine is, so the hides are the 2-inch, the expandables are 2-inch. The Whitetail Furies, I think they're like 2.5. Like they're big.
It is a big bleat. I'd have to get on their website and look. Yeah. I don't have any of the boxes around me. But yes, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to see how they do. I'm interested. Yeah. Like I really want to shoot. I got 3 doe tags right now. I want to put one of them fucking things through it.
What really sold me on them was obviously I run last year and I ran Grim Reaper over the top expandables for a long time. Great broadheads. If somebody handed me a Grim Reaper right now, I would have no issues hunting with them.
Cutting you. I don't think I'd have a problem if someone handed me a Rage.
Nope.
If someone handed me a Montech G5, yep. Handed me a Annihilator, handed me like, dude, I don't
like
think,
a Magnus, old school, dude, Magnus.
Honestly,
buzz cut.
I don't think I would have a problem running any head out there. Sounds cocky, but I'm not saying it. It's just like, dude, make the right shot and the broadhead's going to perform. It's a fucking, they're knives on the end of an arrow.
There's a couple expandables and I don't know the names of them. I've seen them. And
the Timu special.
No, well, obviously those, but there's some, I think that just overcomplicate it.
Sure.
And so I'm like, eh. And as long as they're tough, I don't want anything aluminum on the front of my arrow.
Yep.
But like I said, big Grim Reaper fan. Killed a lot of deer with the big carnivores, the 4 blades and everything. And kind of this year we talked about it a little bit. This is like my last year of like testing broadheads. Like I've been switching up every single year of a different broadhead. And so
I'll give you the credit though. You kind of have it honed down to 3.
I do.
Iron Will. The Annihilator.
Yes, but I put those, Iron Will I like for elk hunting.
But I'm just saying as a whole.
As a whole, Iron Will, Annihilator.
And the Evolution Outdoor.
Evolution Hides. And if for some reason, I don't think this is going to happen, but if I don't like the hides, mm-hmm. going back to the Grim Reapers for my expandable. So I'm like down to, because I've killed truckloads of deer with the Grim Reapers.
Oh, yeah.
But the reason I really like the hides is, let's say for some reason that the broadhead fails,
mm-hmm.
you still have a 1-inch cut. You still have a 1-inch cut.
On my end, when it comes to the broadheads, I mean, I'm kind of invested with Evolution Outdoors. I have a dozen different ones. 6 were for elk, and then I have 6 for whitetail. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the kind of guy that replaces them. Now, I may with these just because I have a lot of them and I can just buy the blades and shit a lot cheaper and have you sharpen mm-hmm. the fixed head back up. But where was I going with this? Like, dude, I just want to put a fucking arrow through some animals, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, one thing I do like about running a fixed blade, and this is, I'm not saying that they're any more lethal or deadly.
Bama's sitting on the picnic table right here. Just look at him. Hey, what are you doing? He got a bath today. He's feeling pretty special.
Oh boy.
Okay. So actually, I know what I did. I cut you. You got something you need.
So
go ahead.
The reason, one of the benefits I like of the fixed blades, no, they don't have as big of a cut as the expandables, but I've got one Annihilator head, like is a really good fixed blade I've been running. I've ran that through 6 deer, same broadhead through 6 different deer,
mm-hmm.
and I just keep sharpening it.
See, that's what I do like about the fixed heads. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, you can just put them, and maybe at a certain point they can get too thin. You know more about that than I
do. Yeah, and there is a number, but I haven't hit it yet.
Yeah, and you're at 6, so mm-hmm. if you're getting, that's the thing I do like, but like, remember like a Rage? Mm-hmm. That thing you shot, you were done
mangled.
With. Yeah, those blades would bend, and I got a feeling, can you replace the blades on a Rage? Mm-hmm. Is that, okay, I didn't know if you could or not. I think these blades are going to do the same thing, they're going to bend, mm-hmm. but that's...
They didn't bend through mine.
Really?
And
these ones are a tad bit longer.
Yeah, and that's true. But they're pretty tough. I blew through a rib.
Yeah.
I blew through that front rib.
This is kind of, we'll stay on the broadhead talk for a minute. We're going to talk about it. The Beast. Mm-hmm. I would be interested to see how they actually perform.
I haven't shot them, so I can't talk about it. Like, from firsthand experience.
For anyone, what we're talking about, Bomar came out with his own broadhead, and it's an expandable.
Yep, it's great materials. Like, he's running a very tough
head. Oh, yeah, I forgot what he said. It's like Germany or something.
Yeah, it's that Lutz steel.
And they go in, it stays closed, and then when it hits, like, it opens. But, like, when you're going through, like, a rib bone, like a gap, they're supposed to close back in, and then once they get passed through the rib, they open back up. Dude, I don't think...
I've seen some tests where
you would almost need one of them gel things, you know, like a, you need it of a deer. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, you don't believe in those?
No, I do. But what I was saying is the test that they did through gel.
Is that what I'm talking about? Yeah. Like, where you can see, like, it's transparent and you can see, like, the insides and the lungs and mm-hmm. the ribs. Okay.
And it, in this test, now I don't know. I didn't do the test. I don't know if that gel was thicker gel than what a deer would be. I have a hard time believing it would not be thicker, or it would be thicker than like a deer.
Yeah.
It expanded on impact, which mm-hmm. is great. Then when it went into the gel, it collapsed.
Yeah.
Like it was supposed to do when on something hard. It never opened. This is just bare gel that it went. It never opened. So that is, I would like, if I'm going to run a two blade expandable, I'd want something that locked back, 100% locked back.
And, like, they're expensive. It's like $90 for three. But I don't know. I don't think I'd ever pay the money to do it. I do just think it's an interesting technology.
No, it is. And I think it's really well made. My thing is, what's the spring pressure? And when it collapses on, you know, going through. Like, I just, after that gel block test.
Yeah, I don't know. They're interesting. Okay, so we were kind of talking about, like, broadheads, how, like, you're done changing. Mm-hmm. Are there some things you're always going to change? Do you have, like, for me, it's arrows, like my wraps. I'm going to change them every year just because I like having fun with it. Yep. Do you have anything like that where you're ever not going to stop tinkering?
I like tinkering a lot, but I also think it's fun of like, this goes back to like the long range shooting stuff. Mm-hmm. I try and ring the rag. Once I know I'm good for the season, I'll have a dozen arrows for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a dozen experimental, like what I'm just playing with to see if I like it, just cause I think it's fun.
Yeah.
But I still have,
it also gives you something to do in the off season to kind of pass time, keep you busy, kind of keep you mm-hmm. dialed with like bow hunting, you know what I mean? Keeps you in tune.
Keeps me in tune to it. And like, just, I wanted to try to see, hey, is this any better?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably always tinker with stuff.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to like, I used to be really bad at tinkering, and I think this is where people can get too far into the weeds, where like I was tinkering so much that I asked myself, I was like, and this was with rifles, and I translated it over to with bows. I was like, at one point I was tinkering with so many different bullets, reloading different stuff. I was like, I don't have one gun right now that if a coyote ran through my, you know, if back my backyard, that I could go out and feel confident making a 200 yard shot. I'm like, okay, we're, and so I always, and I translated it to bow setup. I have a setup where if I want to go, if let's say that big boy daylights right tonight.
Give him a name. Come on.
I'll come up with something. Come on. If that big buck comes out daylights tonight and I have to head out there tonight to mm-hmm. hunt the morning, I always have a setup now where 100% I am ready to rock at all times.
Well, it's also one of those things, if you're always switching shit up, you're not going to have that confidence. Same mm-hmm. thing with like the broadhead deal. Like you got to kind of find something and stick to it for your whole setup. Because if you're always switching it up, you're going to be like, well, here, send a fucking prayer. Let's hope this is good.
Yep.
Oh, that didn't work. It's like, no, pick something, fine tune it and have the confidence to run it.
100%.
This is kind of fast forwarding, but dude, I think I'm going back to Hoyt.
Okay.
When I was running that Venom 33, the one Bryce has it now.
Uh-huh.
I had the most perfect setup I could have. And I'm just talking about like shooting in the yard, like something about this setup now. And I don't know if it's the speed difference I'm noticing, if it's because I'm running on that setup. It was a Venom 33, 29 inch draw, 70 pounds. The vanes I was running was a Q2I.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little softer, more flexible vane than these tacks because these tacks are really stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And these fly good. They're fine. Like when I was training for Colorado, dude, I was shooting far and they fly good. But something about my current bow setup and arrow, I can't figure it out. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to try to mimic that Venom 33 setup. I want to get back to that. And so that's going to be a new bow. That's going to be redoing an arrow setup with the vanes. Everything else is, I'm leaving the same heads up front. Everything on the arrow is going to be the same, but the vanes pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, which yep. You're kind of like, I don't know. I talk about it and you give me this look. You're like, oh, I don't know if you should do that. I think I'm going to go back to the old wrist rocket.
Okay.
Just because, like, no one can see what I'm doing, but when you come to full draw, you know, some guys draw like this, but I can't do it because of my shoulder.
Yep. He can't draw with his elbow above his hand.
Yes, I can't draw with the knuckles to my face. It rips my fucking shoulder up and it hurts. So mm-hmm. I come back flat, and then I got to come here and find my anchor. With the index release, mm-hmm. dude.
Sure.
I just, and I never had a problem with it. I was never punching a trigger. I did it because, just like all of us, around a certain time, these thumb buttons, you know, these back tension releases, they were the thing, and everybody was switching to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some guys who didn't. They still stick with their old school index finger releases, the wrist straps.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think I want to get back to that because I know you're more likely to punch a shot, but we can both agree that there's a reason, there is a time where you need to punch it. If you have a deer come in and it's fast
mm-hmm.
and unexpected, you got to get to full draw, you got to get on him, and you got to shoot. You don't get to work through a shot, you know, and push, pull, however you do your fucking, your process. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I want to just get back to the simple fucking mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong to do that?
I don't think so. I think, again, everybody's what works for everybody. I mean, there's some people that have never switched, you know, they shoot phenomenal with an index release.
Oh, there's guys who shoot bows that are 20 years old still.
100%.
I want to try to get, because dude, I swear, man, and the release doesn't really have anything to do with it, but that old setup, it was zipping. We talked about it. I had that bow, and you're like, dude, like, this is perfect. We were, you know, FOC, I mean, we talk about it, but it had a great FOC. It was cooking. And I almost think it's the speed thing, because if you think about it, the arrow's leaving the bow slower,
mm-hmm.
so I get to see the arrow, you know, it's not hitting as fast. And I just can't figure it out. And we're going to shoot later today.
Yeah.
But
also that phase four is not a speed bow. The new lifts are, and I shoot a lift, but also I had to change my draw length shorter, half an inch shorter, because.
Are you at 29 and a half?
Yeah. I'm at 29 and a half.
You were a 30?
With PSC and Hoyt, I'm a 30. But
so I also think a lot of that plays into these, because you gotta have a longer D loop on them to put that twist in that D loop, you know, to get here.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking that D-loop and twisting it. I feel like that plays into it too.
But also, the neck on my release is a lot shorter than
it
that.
It is.
And I'm saying, but I use the same.
That probably adds what?
Half an inch probably.
Yeah.
So mine, I use the same release on from my PSE to my Levitate to my lift.
Yeah.
But I guess, I don't know if it's the way PSE measures it. PSE's 30 is the same length as Matthew's 29 and a half.
Really? That's interesting.
And so, and I've heard that before, like Hoyt's
Hoyts are half an inch to three quarter inch long on their draw. Mm-hmm. So if so, even if you have a 28 inch draw, it's really like a 28 and three quarter.
Interesting.
A 28 with a Hoyt is, you know, it totally measures out what it, yeah. And that's just how they set it up.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't switch just because I really like, and if I have to, like, let's say, get that shot to break right now, I can do it with my release.
Mm-hmm. But and I can too, but I, oh man, I just, and I shoot good with it. There's no problem with it. I can't, like, dude, I've shown you groups and shooting at 60, 70 yards. Mm-hmm. It's just, what set it off was the other day, me and Bryce were shooting, and he's like, hey, can I try that release? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Because, like, it was funny. He took this, and I put back on my old release that I gave him. Uh-huh. And I wanted to shoot it. And I came to full draw, and I was just like, oh, my God. I just missed that feeling. It felt so good. But I couldn't shoot the fucking thing because I couldn't see my peep.
Yeah.
I was surprised he was able to run this and still line up his peep with his sight and shoot. I couldn't. But it was just so nice, man. It was straight here. And also, another thing with these, you might think different. Maybe it's just me. I've had to draw a bow from down here before.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to come low and not do it up here because, like, you're like, shit, you got to be quiet. You can do it so slow, get it out, slowly come up. You can't do, you maybe can, but I don't know why. I like the idea of being able to draw with my hand free.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pressure on the hand. And dude, I think I want to get back to it.
Yeah, it'd be something to try.
And, you know, worst case scenario, it doesn't work out. It's like, okay, go back to JP, move the, you know, just reset the bow up, you know, and get your anchor back to for the button and have the peep moved and everything.
See,
it's not something that's got to be set in stone if I go to
100%.
It.
100%. I would shoot.
But the bow thing, I am going back to Hoyt.
Okay.
Call me Dud.
I would shoot. Like, I'll still stick with my button release or thumb mm-hmm. release, but I shoot it like a back tension, yep. Like I loop, but
you do something different than I do. We both shoot them like a back tension, but me, my thumb is here and it's just pull and it, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? You're doing something weird.
So I touch, and for listeners at home, I touch my thumb to my index finger, and then I pull through. So I'm not, so my thumb can't move at all. And that's when I pull through.
Yeah.
But if I have to, absolutely, that shot's got to go right now. I can just pull hard. Yeah. I mean, that's what I've done before. I just, you know, I'll push pull and just really, you know, go through it.
Well, that's like Drew, I can't put words in his mouth, but I know it's like he runs the true back tension. He runs mm-hmm. the silverback. And he can make that thing go off if he needs it to. Mm-hmm. I think with especially that true back tension, I have too much of a shoulder problem to make it go off. Yep. But he can do it. But he's been shooting it for years. And I've been shooting this thing for a couple of years now. But like he'll tell you, he's like, oh, I have no problem getting it to break. But mm-hmm. I just think there's something simple of like, go back to the basics and do this. And it's for me, man, it's boom. And it's just don't punch it, you know? And yeah. I never had a problem doing it.
I had a big problem. I shoot enough rifles and shotguns that I had a big problem punching with my index.
Yeah.
And I don't punch a rifle trigger. I don't punch a rifle trigger, but with a bow, I would punch that index.
So this is interesting. Which one would you say you're a better shot with overall?
Thumb button
versus a rifle.
Oh no, I'm a better shot with a rifle.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah. Bow to rifle. You'd say rifle.
Oh, 100%.
I would have said rifle too. Yeah. Okay. Moving on from that one. One more thing I want to get into before we close this one down. Blood trail in a deer
mm-hmm.
that winds up on the neighbors.
Yep.
If you have a dickhead neighbor, you're
yeah. Cause
Go ahead and go into that and explain that law for Kansas.
So a couple years ago, I had a buddy who ran into this exact same situation. Now, I don't know your local laws, so
we're talking Kansas.
So I don't know your local laws. Do whatever. whether I, this isn't whether I agree with it or not. The law is if a deer runs onto your neighbors that you do not currently have written permission, you have to call that landowner and ask for permission. If he says no, that's end of story. You can call the game warden. The game warden can find the deer. The game warden can go over there. He can do whatever he wants. He can find the deer. If that game warden still will not, if the, or if the, sorry, the landowner still will not let you go get that deer, that's end of story. But the, on the other hand, that landowner can't move that deer, can't move that buck without putting his tag on it. He cannot get a salvage tag on it.
Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that part. What, dude? So you said you have a scenario, you had a buddy who had a scenario with this.
Yep. He is hunting.
Was the landowner that that buck ended up dying on, was he, is he a hunter?
What's that? Yeah. Oh yeah. He's a hunter.
The,
he was
the landowner, the guy he didn't have permission on who, so your buddy shoots the deer here. Mm-hmm. It runs onto this guy's property. Mm-hmm. The guy who owns this property, he's a hunter.
Yes.
That guy's a douchebag.
Well, yeah.
You, if it, you are a fucking hunter, I don't care if it's a bow, crossbow, I don't care if you hunt anything. It's not even deer. If you're just a coon guy, whatever. If you have anything to do and you hunt and you don't let somebody come get their deer, you can kick fucking rocks, dude.
Yeah. My thing, he was pissed that he was hunting there in the first place. So kind of a special deal. Kansas has, there's only two public, how do they call it? Publicly navigable rivers in Kansas. That's the Kansas River and that's the Ark River. Where Kansas, every other river besides those two, you, the landowner owns to the middle of the river. So if you're wading out in
the river. So kind of like a hedgerow agreement? Like if I own this half and you own this half, the hedgerow's like a shared.
No, so on, like a river, let's say there's a river that's this wide.
Yeah.
I own that side. You own this side. Huh. And you could wade halfway out in the river.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's a boat and you, that boat drops an anchor, he is trespassing on your property.
Hmm.
So.
You know what I'm saying about like a hedgerow? Like a I forgot what it's called. Like a joint hedgerow agreement. Like you both, you share.
Like a right of way.
Yeah, you share it. Like if you have this half and I have this half. I can put a stand here, and so can you. You obviously can't shoot on this side, and I can't shoot on that side, unless we're like buddies and don't give a shit. But if it comes down to, you know, dickhead, not a dickhead, and this guy gets mad, it's like, no, I can have a stand here. It's a joint. It's shared.
Yep. So it's different. So with, so that's what they thought is what, because they thought they owned to the middle of the river.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this river is one of the public, it's on the Ark River. Publicly navigable. And that means from high watermark to high watermark, which it means in like, let's say the day of Noah's flood, the highest that water has ever been all the way down. It doesn't matter if that water hasn't been there in 80 years. That is public ground, public ground.
Hmm.
So he saw that and he's like, hey, cause he only hunts public ground. He goes, he saw that and goes, well, that's public land. I'm going to go down there and hunt. And it caused a big uproar. The guy, he, my buddy got the sheriff's called on him because in their defense, in the very beginning, they have a defense for this, but nothing, nothing else after this. In their like 70 years of owning that property, no one's ever been down there and they didn't realize it was public. So the sheriff's department comes up and my buddy goes, this is public ground.
Yeah.
And then he shows them the rule book and sheriffs are like, no, he's right. This is public ground.
Well, and I get like the frustration thing to, let's say the guy on the other side of the fence. Like I kind of have this situation. What do you call it? Like fence hunting. Mm-hmm. I am not trying to fence hunt.
No,
I am literally pushed down to this bottom because everything else has been it gets used by the landowners. This is the only area they cannot get to with a side-by-side or a four-wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm kind of naturally pushed to hunt. And it just so happens to be all the damn trees I need to be in on my side get closer and closer to his fence. Mm-hmm. I am not trying. I will never shoot a deer on his side. I would never do that. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't close to the fence. I am. I have to be, or else I hate ground blinds. I'm not putting a ground blind up. Mm-hmm. I want to be in a tree, and this is kind of the scenario that it is. And I've talked to him, and we've talked. He's like, hey, man, good luck this season. It doesn't seem like there's any bad blood, mm-hmm. but it also goes back to the big deer make people do. Like, if I shoot him, there's a 50-50 shot where he runs. Mm-hmm. It all honestly depends on which way he comes in and he's facing. Like, I don't know about you. I don't think I've ever shot a deer. He does a 180 and goes back this way.
Yeah.
Whichever way he's facing, mm-hmm. he'll usually run that way. Now, if he's facing like this way and let's say he gets shot, I have had him go like this before and run back this way.
Mm-hmm.
But if everything works out the way I think it's going to be, the way he's going to come in, I think I'm going to shoot him like this. I'm going to be up here. He's going to go this way,
mm-hmm.
which would be good. That's on my side. That way I don't have to do the whole, hey, I shot a deer. It's on your piece.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I've thought about it so much, and I get kind of, like, nervous about it. I'm going to, like, bring my fucking 9-month-old. I'm going to bring my baby and sure. everything and my wife and be like, tell me no now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just scares me, though, because I've heard the fucking podcast of people telling these stories,
mm-hmm.
and it is like, especially on a deer that, let's say, hits that magical 200 number.
Mm-hmm.
You could lose that deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, kind of going back to how you said they have to put their tag on it, if you find an asshole who has a dead 200 laying on their piece, I don't think they're going to have a problem not putting their tag on it.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I've almost thought about this. This is wrong. To be like, hey, man, if this happens, you know, situation, and go, hey, I shot a deer. He's on your piece. Well, what buck did you kill? He's an 8.
Yeah.
Like, lie, but you don't want to, I don't want to do that. Like, I just no, want it all.
I would just say, I don't know, he had, you know.
Do you know what I mean, yeah, though?
100%.
It's like, and like, look at Iowa, or is it Illinois? One of the two do it right. If they tell you no, you call the fucking game warden.
Yep,
you show them the blood on your side, and you show the blood on that side. That game warden's fucking taking you by the arm, and they go, we're getting this motherfucker.
Yep.
That's how it is up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it should be if you're going to have someone who's being an asshole. But at the end of the day, it's like, dude, if you're a hunter, like if that happened to me, yeah, I wouldn't want, like, let's say someone shoots a buck November 5th
mm-hmm.
and they call you. I'd want to go with them so they're not just stomping around all over your piece.
Oh, 100%.
You know, bugging up your hunting spots. But, dude, you got to do the right thing
yep.
and let someone have their deer
mm-hmm.
even if it ends up on their side of the fence. I guarantee you it happens all the time, especially around here where ground is so split and divided up. It just makes you wonder how many times that actually happens to just like the average guy and they get told no.
Yeah.
I bet it's more than we think.
Oh, 100%.
No, I just that irks me that there's so many rules like that too. Like, it's not just that one. It's like, why can't we fix this?
Yeah.
Why has this not been changed? I don't know. I would just hate for anyone to lose a deer.
For sure.
But other than that, dude, I think we kind of finished out the part two to yesterday.
Knocked it out.
Yeah. We're going to go shoot some arrows.
Perfect.
Yeah. We're done.
Works for me.
All right, guys. Next weekend. So it's going to be, man, all in that time where it's about to start get interesting.
Yep. Hope the weatherman's wrong.
Yeah, I saw. It's too nice.
Yep, stays too hot.
But once again, deer are going to be deer.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I just want everyone to have a baller season. Like Bryce and I were talking about it last night when we were all eating. We were in the kitchen. He's like, dude, we need to do like some more deer camp stuff. I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah. I'm like, that's what makes it fun. Like, I really hope Bryce punches one, Lexi does. I hope I kill this fucking big one.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you do it. Like, and Colton, it's like, God, It's so much fun, right? It is. And it makes it way more fun when everyone's around partying, having fun, and just a big group with a fun atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I want tags to start getting punched so bad.
Oh, I do too.
But no, till then, guys, keep shooting your bows. You know, fucking hunt smart. Other than that,
yeah, have a good season.
Yeah, we'll stay in touch on our end. All right, I appreciate you guys listening to the Midwest Hinds Hunt Podcast. We will catch you on the next one. See ya.
Dude, he's a toad. Holy smokes, dude.
Welcome back to the Midwest Hinds Hunt Podcast. I am your host, Braden Tolles. Thanks for tuning in. I can't believe I'm living my dream. Early morning flights, the skies are filled up with these whistling wings. Sights that dreams are made of. Look at God's creation. Dust coming in as we struggle to load. Kid number two is a hell of a load. Shots going off as they dropping the hood. It's so cold and my call keeps sticking. I'm being precise with the notes I'm picking. My lead is true, so no duck I'm missing. Full choke, so I'm good at a distance.